Welcome to B2B Bites Back, the social media podcast. I'm Luke Brennan-Jones.
And I'm Helen Sharp.
Hello, and we're back for 2022. We've got lots of exciting things to talk about that we haven't talked about so far. So what are we going to be talking about this year?
We are of so many things. I think communities being a massive one in the B2B world, exec comms, which is something we're seeing a lot more of at the moment.
Exec comms, I think we can see us talking about employee advocacy this year as well, that whole sort of blurring advocacy piece, and then probably more about what we're going to talk about today as well. So what are we talking about today?
We are talking about virtual events and live streaming.
Hot topic, massively hot topic that's subsumed our lives for the last few years. And I guess the first question is, why are we talking about this on a social media podcast?
Well, simply it's massive, and we've seen it. I think there's been so much uncertainty around events in general, and you know, before COVID, it was very much you do your face-to-face events, you meet people, you get out and about. Now, I mean, it's just, we've had how many, the second year or something? It's been a long time. And now we've had to kind of move towards this virtual world, and also, you know, it goes hand in hand with social. And I think social media has been heavily relied on when it comes to the success of a virtual event.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah, and we'll get into the detail really, but I'm starting to see virtual events, hybrid events, being part of social media really.
Massively.
More than anything. So, great, that's why we're going to talk about it. And I suppose you and I are kind of in this space a lot, aren't we?
I've
been running DigiConf, which some of our viewers may know. Virtual conference. Thank you. Yeah, 1,000 people came last year. All good. So that's a fully virtual event, and you know, we've run it 3 years running now. And of course, you've been running award-winning virtual events too.
Yes, yeah. I don't like to brag, but we did win.
You do like
we did win best. I do. We did win best use of social media and influencer marketing for the B2B Marketing Awards. So yeah, super proud of that one. But we'll come on to that one in a bit because it's a good one.
Good. All right. You're bursting to tell us more about that. So let's first on. We should really talk about kind of what's going on in the industry. So what's going on in terms of B2B live streaming and virtual events? And I've got some stats which I'll throw in just to
confuse out a
us.
Bit.
Yeah. So you know what? I forgot to talk about what we're talking about today in terms of the agenda for the whole podcast.
Oh, right.
So,
we'll go back and we'll just do that one.
Take that back. So basically,
you just got excited because it's our first one of 2022, so you're eager.
Lost the plot. So there's four things on the list. So first thing is we're going to talk about trends. So what's happening in the industry, how B2B virtual events and live streaming are developing. We're also going to talk about best practice. So we've got some top tips, insights from the coalface to share. We've also got an interview with Kwai Chi. So Kwai Chi, who is the social media manager at Intuit, behind QuickBooks, biggest financial tech company in the world.
Huge.
So he's talking about a case study that he won 17 awards for last year involving virtual events.
Oh, that's just blown my one award out of the water.
I didn't want to say, but yeah.
Awkward.
Sorry. Thunder stolen. And then we've also got an interview with our very own George O'Keefe talking to Liza Rowland, who is the marketing manager, the Americas at Intertrust. And that's a fascinating conversation about LinkedIn
great.
Live. So, right, let's go back to our first big question. Right, so what's going on in the industry? What are the big trends that are happening now?
So much. I think we'd probably need longer than just this podcast to talk about it. But I think if we narrow it down to the way that the events have kind of moved to be virtual, and I think this kind of uncertainty that's surrounded us for so long, people are making critical decisions about events based on assumptions. And there's this kind of, we're in this unprecedented times, and people are thinking, back at the end of 2020, people were thinking, we'll plan a face-to-face for 21 because it's going to be fine then. We've got the vaccine. It's all going to be absolutely fine. So they're putting these face-to-face events and they've had to cancel them. And quite often it's last minute. So it's, you know, that's massive, and budgets are being lost. They're losing out on opportunity to create content and engage their audiences. So I think when we're thinking about how the world has changed, it's become virtual because we've had to. But actually, is it ever going to go back to being purely face-to-face?
No, that's the thing. That's the thing that keeps coming back, I think. And I've got some stats, that one of which I think may be backing that up. So so here's one. 400% increase over the past 2 years in virtual event platforms. So we're being enabled in this space a lot more. It used to just be, you know, webinar platforms and a couple of others. So that's a LinkedIn stat. 85% of marketers have held a virtual event in the past year, to back up what you were saying. And this one, you know, marketers expect 40% of the events they attend in 2022, this year, to be virtual and 35% to be hybrid.
That's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, three quarters of the events we go to are going to be not face-to-face. They're going to be hybrid or whatever.
Which I think is great, because I think, you know, when we think about accessibility and things, and often as well, people don't often want to travel to events, especially now when, you know, there is all this uncertainty and illness and things. People are thinking, actually, I'd rather just tune in from home. Other people are missing that and crave that attention. So it's like, how can we offer both to everyone?
But it's also causing issues as well. So I was listening to a podcast actually yesterday about the fact that event managers and event organizers are not trained in this sort of space. So there's this kind of skills gap in terms of, you know, marketing, you know, building community around your event, and also, you know, kind of the technical side of it as well, which, you know, we help our clients with, but it's an area that's not been filled until now, so there's a big gap there.
I think that's such a good point, and I think thinking about that as well from the other side, the technology is so important, because if you're not experienced and you're rolling out this new platform because you think, oh, we need to be on this, but you don't know how to execute it properly, that's going to be a bad user experience. And I think also from the other side again, how do people communicate and kind of educate their senior stakeholders to allow them to do these kind of events if actually they're still relatively new and people are still learning, you know, how to deliver a really good virtual event? Because tech's changing, user behaviour's changing, people want different things. So it's that constantly evolving change.
It is. And then there's the biggie as well in terms of trends, LinkedIn Live for us. Yeah. You know, we've done a lot of work on that. And
can
go on, tell us about your success.
Yes. So back in, I can't even remember exactly when, it was 2020.
January.
It was January 2021, wasn't it? Times merging. But it was right in the middle of kind of this working from home, everyone's remote. How could we leverage all these really, so we work with these thought leaders, very key practitioners in their field, for Refinitiv, so part of the London Stock Exchange Group. And what they wanted to do was really leverage the profiles of their thought leaders while talking about really niche subjects that mattered to the brand. So it was completely global. So if you think we're working across 4-5 different time zones, that's a lot of planning already, but it's accessible for the attendees because they don't have to fly to Hong Kong, they don't have to fly to New York. It's very much from the comfort of their own home. So we decided to do 24 live streams on the hour, every hour, which, headache, but it was brilliant and it was truly innovative. You know, the brand were able to produce something that actually, it took, you know, the community, we're going to talk a bit more about that later because it's so important, but it took the whole community to really come together to create these brilliant conversations around topics that the audience cared about, giving it to them in their homes, which I think was so powerful.
And I think the innovation piece there is still available for many industries, you know, especially in the B2B sector. You could be the first to do a 24-hour LinkedIn live if you're completely crazy and you want to take on such a thing. But you could also do something that's, you know, slightly less ambitious but equally innovative if you use some of the features available.
Yeah.
So I think LinkedIn Live's a biggie, we should mention. And then the other that I'm seeing a lot of is this hybrid move. So the real cutting edge of innovation being, how do you create a similar experience offline as you would online? Yeah. Is that possible?
Well, it's, do you know what? I think there's different ways of looking at it, and I think there's a case to argue for each. So I think when we're talking about this hybrid event, like, to you, what does that look like? If you think hybrid?
So I think it would be, you've got to make a choice about whether your event is primarily virtual or primarily face-to-face. And in our decisions, the events I've been involved with, it's around, okay, what are the relative merits of each? So virtual, you're right, you get people, you can get a large number of people signing up, there's less sort of requirement on them to turn up and travel, things like that. But obviously face to face, you get a much, much stronger experience, a bigger opportunity for sales. Mm. Obviously lead gen is really big for B2B as well. So I think, you know, combining those two elements and working out what you can do best in each. And I do think the face to face networking and the sales environment is 100% better face to face if you can.
Yeah, I do agree with that. But I do think as well, there has to be a way that companies kind of empower their sales people to be able to take what they would do, try and replicate it. Obviously, it's not going to be the same experience, but try and have a strategy in place where you think, right, we can't meet face to face. We can't have that handshake. I know you talk about like the importance of that physical interaction, but what's the next best thing and how can they do that? Because actually, like you said earlier, a lot of people, they're not comfortable using social media, and it's the same for a lot of salespeople. They're not necessarily confident using it. When we're thinking about how we can reach out to people on LinkedIn, for example, it's just giving them the tools and the confidence to say, actually, what you did before, you might not be able to do that for this event, but you can do this.
Absolutely, yeah, okay. I'll go with that, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, we can agree.
It's a challenge, we can go. So if we were to distill it down just to like three challenges, let's say, and I've got some in my head, but basically, first one is, I think, you know, how do you attract your audience to a virtual event? That feels like it's a really big issue at the moment, you know, and competing with all the gazillion of other events that are going on.
Yeah.
So any thoughts on that? Top tips?
Yeah, I think it's a really good point. When we're thinking about that kind of competition, it's a heavily oversaturated market at the moment. Everybody is competing for everyone's attention all the time. But it's more than that as well. And I think it's that fatigue that we get. You know, I'm on video calls all day, every day. Do I want to join an event that's going to be someone talking at me? So it's, what is the actual offering? How can you make it different from their day to day? How can you give them something that's going to engage them? And that might be those kind of shorter form content pieces. So rather than hours of just being spoken to, it's about involving people, being a part of the event itself.
I did see a huge, there was a stat, a huge drop off. If your event is longer than 2 hours, it drops off a cliff in terms of whether people actually register for it. Mm. So that's an interesting one. But also, the thing I've been reading about is the experience, the importance of not considering an event, a virtual event, as a piece of content. Because we all, as B2B marketers, you look at a virtual event and think, oh, webinar, great, we'll get one of those done.
Think about all the different opportunities for content you can get.
Right, but it's not content, it's an experience.
Yeah.
And that's the difference, I think.
Yeah, I think that's such a good point. And I think everything comes back to user experience, customer experience. You know, when they're joining your event, you want them to be engaged. You don't want to be thinking, oh, make a few notes and then drop off. It's that kind of, and I think that, again, I know we keep talking about community, but that's where that comes back in, because you're pulling people together. You're not just telling them a story, they're a part of that story. And I think that's so powerful if you can do that well.
Yeah, and so the second challenge I had after trying to get people to your end is how you kind of engage with them. And I think, obviously, at a face-to-face event, you can get up on stage and, you know, really get people G'd up and you can get them involved in things. Virtually, it's much, much harder to build that sense of community. Mm. So any thoughts about kind of how you might do that for your event?
So I think just going back to the, you know, having someone on stage, getting everyone geared up, I'd still take that over to virtual. So I'd still have a really charismatic, engaging host to do exactly that, pick them up. I know Salesforce, for example, they brought in Craig David and they, you know, they created such a buzz around it. And it's that kind of the user-generated content. If you're at an event, you might be taking pictures of, you know, different stands and different people that you're meeting. You don't have that virtually. So what can you give, what can you incentivize them to be engaged in it and be sharing stuff on social to make it that kind of social first event, if you like?
Yeah, and I'd say that's maybe one of the primary things you should focus your event on, is how are you going to be driving that engagement?
Yeah.
So we found that with DigiComp. and actually this year we're looking at using Guild a bit more, you know, mm-hmm. the B2B mobile app as a sort of secondary platform to get people engaged before the event.
Yeah.
And after the event as well, because I think that's just as important.
Yeah.
You know, you're not talking about, it used to be an event would be just the day it happens.
Yeah.
And now it's just as important what happens before and of course, the on-demand is potentially bigger than the event.
Exactly, and I think the networking side is so important. And, you know, we've all been locked in our homes for so long that actually, I'd love to get out and meet people, but if I can't do that, I want to meet people virtually. And if we think about LinkedIn, LinkedIn's a great example of having very specific people that share your interests. So why not tap into that?
Yeah, yeah, and we've not gone into the detail on LinkedIn, but I mean, the idea of having a single platform that does part of your marketing, that has community built in, that deals with the tech, you know, those are the three big challenges that event marketers are facing. So I think that's one area that could be used a lot more, perhaps, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
Going forward. I'll just mention before we move on, the last big challenge really around lead gen. And obviously most B2B companies are looking to run events because they want to generate leads.
Yeah.
And then, especially when we're thinking about social media, there's a real challenge. If you're running a LinkedIn Live event, it's now live. You can't take a registration that you get your own contact details for. Mm. Is that a reason why social perhaps doesn't work as well for this kind of thing for B2B?
I mean, in a way, yes, because it's a different approach completely. It's a whole different strategy. And I think when we're thinking about lead generation, I know you've got some ideas and you've been on events where you've seen things that have worked really well. And I think it's going back to innovation, it's constantly thinking about, right, how can we reach those people? Because actually, it's the engagement that's the most important thing. You're going to want them to be engaged. You're going to want to follow up with them. And then you can use promotion, retarget them after the event, follow up with them. There's so much you can do, especially if it's on LinkedIn.
That's it. And I think to answer my own kind of hypothetical question, I think the answer really is the same challenge you face in content marketing, which is how can you provide value for those individuals enough that they then impart their contact details with you? And if you've got a live experience, you should be able to integrate that into it. So yes, I'm an example from DigiConf, one of our sponsors, popped up a little PDF guide with the stats and information that they were sharing. And so if you want to get this now, just click here.
Smart.
And they got a whole bunch of great leads from it.
Yeah. So, but that's, and that goes back to you're giving them value. You're not just asking for their details. It's much more than that.
Yeah.
And I think now as well, with everything that's been happening in recent years about data, we're much more protective of our data. We don't just want to hand it out to anyone. We want, if we're going to do it, we want something back for it.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the challenge, isn't it? Right. Look, so I'm conscious of time. We've done a long intro here, but I think it's been useful just to go through.
Is that still the intro?
Yeah, that's it. That's just we've hardly started, Alan. This is it. But I think we'll go to an interview I did with Kwai Chi, who I mentioned earlier on, social media manager at Intuit, one of the smartest social guys I know. I've known him for many years. We'll cut to the interview because it's fascinating.
Yeah, great.
I'm delighted to be joined by Kwai Chi, who is Principal Social Media Manager at Intuit, one of the world's biggest financial software providers. So welcome, Kwai.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Great stuff. So obviously this session on B2B Bites Back is really focusing on live streaming and virtual events. And when I was given that as a topic, you're one of the first people that sprang to mind. So I was delighted you actually got back to me and said, yes, you're going to come on. But should we kick off by having you just talk us through your role at Intuit and what you do?
Sure. So I look after all UK social media activations, planning strategy across the full breadth of marketing, communications, product, the whole shebang, and also work on some global projects and especially like rolling out some of our key hero campaigns.
Right. Get it. And so, you know, the Ask the Expert campaign you did last year, at least it was winning the awards last year. That's the one that really hit the headlines, you know, won a staggering 17 marketing awards, global acclaim. That was really your brainchild, wasn't it? Can you talk us through that?
Yeah, so it's quite funny actually, because I had COVID in March last year. And during that time I was going online and looking at all this advice that was available to small business owners. And I kind of felt sad that there were all these kind of people who were out to make money, con artists who offered quick training or quick get rich quick schemes. And on the other end of the spectrum, you had very big corporations and universities like Yale offering very highbrow content. But there was nothing for a small business owner that was credible, that people could rely on and put their hat on. So that's where I thought, you know, Ask the Expert would be a great platform to communicate with those people, to offer real experts in their given field, and you could ask them anything you wanted, and they'd answer it.
So talk us through the sort of structure then. Was it sort of short sessions, live sessions, and how did you promote it as well?
So, I mean, Ask the Expert still runs every day right now. So we're about 370 shows in. And it's basically a half hour show. The speaker speaks for about 8 minutes about their given topic. So you know kind of what kind of questions to ask. And you can ask any question, even if it's not related to what they talked about. So if you've got somebody who owns a sweet shop, you can talk to them about logistics of sweets or deliveries of sweets. We'll create those questions and feed them in to the speaker to answer live. There's no host, the host is the speaker. And so this kind of self-hosted YouTuber in their room kind of experience has been basically the success. And like you said, it's been well recognized in the industry.
Yeah, and why do you think it's worked so well? I'm thinking really around the medium as well, you know, that it's live. And also again, I guess, yeah, how you've sort of amplified it, how you've reached the audience.
Yeah, so, you know, when it started, our very first show, we really struggled. It was a minimum viable product. We had about 50 people tune in. And, you know, now we get 14,000 a day. It's quite different. But it takes many steps to get there. For a start, we were only on YouTube and Facebook, but now we're across 15 different platforms, 9 podcast platforms and 6 other platforms on demand and live. So now we, you know, chop up clips, find out the best bits, make highlights for certain platforms so that people can get the information they want wherever they choose to consume their information. And with that information as well, we create extra content with those speakers as well. So if there's a particular campaign around self-assessment that's coming up in January, we'll use those experts and get their best tips and curate them and serve them out on TikTok, for instance, and make sure the right people see the content.
So you mentioned TikTok there, so you're going across all these different platforms, evidently you've got that many running. Where did you start? What was the first sort of setup? Was it just sort of, you know, was it LinkedIn Live? Was it YouTube?
So LinkedIn Live was a beast at the time. It was so difficult to actually use that platform. We explored every platform that we could possibly go live on, and we settled with YouTube and Facebook because they had the lowest barriers. And we used some technology called Restream to simultaneously stream out to those two platforms. Today, we still basically stream out to those two platforms, with most other platforms being on demand. Again, the reason being is it's just so much more mature, the setup of how they run their live stream. And you get so much more data and the control is there as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
But everything else is pretty much on demand.
Yeah, great stuff. And so, I mean, obviously incredible success, still rolling, still going. What would you advise, you know, to a B2B company that's looking at this now going, gosh, where do we start?
I think the key thing is to try it and not give up, right? Sometimes you think like the stats are weak, but if you get the engagement, that's the key thing to look at. If people are asking questions, it means people are watching. And it means that they find out about it somehow, right? And I guess it's the key is not to give up and to give it a crack. If you're going to run a program, don't kind of just run it for a short run and then give up, success or fail. You know, the key thing is to just literally run a program, see how it goes, and reiterate, you know, look at the data, see what's weak, what works, what doesn't. For us, we found that people were tuning in at the wrong time and that they couldn't figure out what the show was about. We saw that from the data. So what we did was we created a pre-roll that lasts for 15 minutes. So if people tune in early, when you get a little notification on Facebook or YouTube that the show has gone live, you're on a holding video which tells you that the show is going to start on the dot. So people are there ready from the start. Now, we didn't know that before, but from data, now we can. So yeah. I would say data, look at this data and don't give up.
Fantastic. Well, you saw a little tip there on the pre-roll as well. Just very briefly, because I know people will be asking, in terms of production cost and this kind of stuff, I'm presuming you started relatively small, but has it built up a lot?
Yeah, so I guess with success comes greater expectations from stakeholders. RC Expert is now rolled out globally across all Intuit QuickBooks sites across the world. Originally, it was just the UK. And with that comes like variations of the program, and certain countries will want to put a lot more spend behind all the content, like the US, for instance. It's very hard to get a cut through without paid media, and so they will tend to put paid media on their content. Whereas in the UK, we're far more organic, and we're quite lucky that it's relatively easy to pick up and engage audience. But that obviously is different market to market. But the budget is pretty small. You know, it's I'd say it's a sub 10K project. You know, it's a pretty cheap thing to run. It just takes time and resource and a lot of dedication.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you certainly achieved that, I think. So thank you, Quiet. Fantastic insights. I'm sure we'll have many, many more questions after the podcast as well. So we might swing back to you, but that's been brilliant. Thank you so much.
Thanks for your time.
Wow, that was great, wasn't it?
It was so good. I think I learned a lot, and I just, listening to him is so insightful and actually really inspirational about, it just shows that consistency and sticking to something really does pay off.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just, some of the little tips, you know, around the experience, you know, that we've been talking about. So, you know, making sure that anybody who comes into the live stream partway through gets a pre-roll so that they get to see what's being talked about.
Yeah.
That's nice. And then also recording lots of extra little content clips when you've got your experts so that you can then use it for promotion.
Yeah, so valuable.
Super smart. I thought I'd also mention as well, it's not on there, but we do have a clip we'll share separately, which is Quiet talking about, he's doing a digital marketing course, and he included a whole load of the stuff that he does for Intuit in terms of B2B marketing, which includes, you know, working on TikTok and all these challenges, these places. And he got his lowest mark because they didn't believe it would work for B2B.
Oh,
he actually does it.
And he's done it.
That's what he does for a living.
I'd go back and ask for a remark.
I know, it's hilarious.
I'd contest that.
He did find it amusing. But anyway. So, yeah, great interview. I was so glad to speak with him. We may get him back on another time for a bit more of a longer update. Right, shall we jump in and go to our next interview as well? So, Georgia spoke to Liza at Intertrust, which is another client of ours.
Yeah.
And they ran this series of LinkedIn Live events for a really B2B audience.
So very niche.
Yeah, it was fund managers in the US, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And I just thought it was a bold step. But anyway, so we're here from Liza.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining us on our podcast this month. Really excited to speak to you. I know we've spoken quite a lot about this in the past, so keen to get some more thoughts from you on virtual events.
Thank you, Georgia. Happy to be here.
Perfect. So we'll kickstart it with the first question, because I know that at Intertrust you guys have been doing loads of and looking at different ways in which you can use virtual events. So what was that turning point for you guys and the team, and what, when you were looking to add the virtual events to your strategy, what was really that turning point?
Well, virtual events have always been part of our strategy. We've always done webinars. We are a large global company, and our target audiences, our business partners, our clients, they're all over the world. So virtual events, I think, have always been important to companies like us. Of course, when the pandemic hit, it became more urgent and more important to figure out how to make our virtual events bigger, more frequent. I think that was a response that a lot of other companies had as well. How are we going to kind of compete with the webinar fatigue? How are we going to make sure that we effectively switch what normally would have been, you know, in-person events? How do we make sure that we do that effectively online? So that's how I think we began working with you at OST.
Yeah, great. So in terms of like any advice that you would give from the learnings that you've had over the past kind of year to 18 months, what do you think B2B companies should be using LinkedIn Live for example, within their marketing strategies?
So LinkedIn Live, I think, is a really interesting platform when it comes to virtual events versus the more traditional, you know, platforms that we would typically use back before the pandemic. So I think it came out at a very helpful time for a lot of us. I mean, LinkedIn is critical to our business development and marketing strategy. It's very important to us. You know, it homes all of our content. Our brand identity is there. We have lots of followers. We all have personal networks. So obviously it's something that we use every single day. It's very, very important. When you are able to use a webinar platform, a live event platform that dovetails with something like LinkedIn, it makes things easier. Typically when we would do a webinar back in the day, you know, how are we gonna drive people to this event? Are we gonna do marketing mailers? Are we gonna, you know, just send out emails? Are we gonna end up putting this invite on LinkedIn anyway? LinkedIn took that guesswork out of it. And it was really a smart decision on their part to just put it all into one place with the LinkedIn Live function. So that was definitely why we decided. So we did a series of four events, all obviously virtual on LinkedIn Live. And I think it really made that doable. Four events in a short time frame, as you know, is a huge undertaking. Driving the right people to the events is a huge undertaking. When you're able to put that into the place that all of your followers already exist, it just helps. It helps up the attendance and it helps get the right people that you need to be there.
100%. And I think that's what we found was really interesting as well, because we could also see, you know, who was really engaging with it. And especially with, I know we had many conversations about keeping everything in platform and keeping that journey going consistently. So it was definitely, like you say, a really smart move for LinkedIn to kind of do that, especially through the pandemic. And now they're opening it up to more and more businesses, which is brilliant. So in terms of, if we take away, you know, just the live stream element, what else do you see as there being a benefit to live streaming on social media organically?
Well, obviously social media is really important in marketing. And I think I kind of touched on this, but when it holds all of the things that are important for events to begin with, so your brand identity, the people that you want to be at your events, it's a really interesting way to approach live streaming. So, I mean, you know, I touched on this, but it takes some of the hard work out of it. So I think when you can, you know, combine social media and virtual events, like there's no going back from that. It's a huge game changer.
Yeah. And then I know we were talking about how we can use the content later as well. So it's not just about the stream itself. How else can we use that? And I know there's some plans and things have been discussed on your side as to what you could do. But it is like the opportunities are kind of endless once you put that content, right?
Absolutely. LinkedIn saves that, right? So it all lives on there. It's not like you're doing something on a different platform and then afterwards you're scrambling. How can we make assets out of this? How can we make shareables? How can we end up taking what we've just done and putting it on LinkedIn anyway? It takes kind of an inconvenient step out of the equation, which, I mean, we're all looking to simplify things. We're all looking to reach our target audiences in an easier way. This does that really nicely.
Absolutely. So looking forward as we are going into 2022, what do you think is the future for live streaming? Do you think it's gonna work hand in hand with face-to-face events? What's your perspective on that?
I don't think virtual events are going anywhere. We've proven that they work. They're don't want to say they're easy to organize because they're not, but you know, when you're not doing those physical logistics, there is kind of that ease to it. They can be more affordable than sometimes planning giant in-person events. And people like them. It generates content. There are so many pros, I think, that we've realized throughout the past 2 years that come with virtual events that maybe we would have shrugged off before the pandemic. I don't see in-person events happening anymore without that virtual component. And I think that's because, first of all, not everyone is comfortable going to a large conference anymore. Mm. And I think back in the day, 2019, perhaps the last maybe, you know, in-person conference that I was at, one of the things that was always a challenge for us was how do you get content from this conference? I'm manning our booth. I'm worrying about our brands. My sales colleagues are arranging meetings. They're going to these panels, but they're networking. How do we actually get content to propel forward our content strategy was always a challenge. And it was always, even though we all recognized that it was important, it was sometimes in the moment, not a priority. When you add in a virtual streaming component into an in-person face-to-face event, it kind of takes out that problem. What you mentioned before, if all these things are just kind of naturally going onto LinkedIn, that makes things easier for us. And it helps move our strategy forward in an easier way than, before when we didn't have something like a LinkedIn Live or we weren't really prioritizing webinars and things like that. So I don't think standalone virtual events are going anywhere. And I think that you're not really going to see any in-person events that don't have some sort of virtual component going forward.
Yeah, that's really interesting as well, because I guess to your point, you can be a bit more agile, can't we, like moving forward with the hybrid focus around events. You don't just have to be location specific now. We can really broaden our horizons. And that's, again, something that we really found when we did the four events, that we could really either be very niche with our audience, or if we found that actually organically more people from all over the world were wanting to get involved, that's fine too. So what do you see as the biggest challenge that marketing teams are going to face moving forward as we enter this, I don't want to say it, but new normal, as everyone is still referring to it as, but how do you see the future of that being and the biggest challenge?
Well, in a way it's easier, right? I think when it comes to content, to me, that's easier just because you have more to work with and you can generate assets at a faster pace. I think figuring out processes is going to be the challenge for a lot of teams. We're going to an event soon. And typically in the past, if we had gone to an event like this, we would have, like I mentioned before, we would have been focusing on our brand, our booth, our meetings. Now there's another thing to focus on, which is how are we going to add a really interesting virtual component to the event that we're going to. So I think, initially there's a little bit more legwork that will pay off in the end. But at the same time, for me, this is the fun part. And I think this is really what's going to foster a lot of innovation and creativity that maybe we didn't have the opportunity for, before we realized that this was a really important and effective tool.
Yeah, perfect. No, I completely agree with that. I don't think, like you say, I don't think it's going away. It's just how we use it now moving forward. So thank you so much, Liza. That was really interesting. And as always, love speaking to you. But thank you for joining us. I hope to have you on again soon.
Thank you, Georgia.
Bye.
So I thought that was super useful. And I think, Georgia works so closely with Intertrust. And actually, Georgia, I have to give Georgia a shout out because she was on the award-winning team for the Refinitiv one. But just with Intertrust, I think, everything Liza was saying, completely in agreement. And, she referred to webinar fatigue. She talked about kind of it being a game changer using LinkedIn because your followers are already there. Your intended audience are there. Your brand identity is there.
Yeah.
It's all so true.
That's the bit I really took from her interview, really, which is that, trying to run four events. If you said to a marketing team, right, put on four events, yeah, for 1,000 attendees in another country, and you've, yeah, got to do it over the next 3 months.
They'd fall
off their chairs, yeah. But actually, LinkedIn, because it's got the audience there, it's got the advertising, it's got, yeah, the platform, everything you need. I think that's the big takeaway for me. She saw it as the enabler,
yeah,
to do that.
Yeah, really good.
The other word I took away from her was the sort of portability of virtual events, the fact that, you're not tied necessarily to all the logistics, of other events, and that enables you to be a bit nimbler and try stuff out.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's, yeah, everything she said, I think, we've seen, obviously we've been working with Intertrust, but across the industry, there's been so much, so much appreciation, I think, of these platforms, because it's given marketers so much flexibility that they didn't have before.
Yeah.
So it's,
yeah,
definitely here to stay.
And also a good example of those kind of industries where you wouldn't, I think, they were the first really in their space to do this kind of event, this, yeah, kind of series. And it's probably worth mentioning, so you didn't talk about it in there, but one of the other things they did, which I really loved, was up the quality of the production of the videos. So, I know we sent out little studios in a box to each of the speakers. So they had a really high quality webcam, a light, green screen, The guys here did some really lovely animations of the logo and things behind, so it was like almost TV quality.
Yeah, but that goes back again to user experience, because as a viewer, you want it to look slick. You don't want it to look like it's just been thrown together.
Yeah, no, exactly. That's it. And you know, you've got to be pushing that bar higher, especially at the moment. So
yeah,
fascinating interview.
Yeah, really good.
Look, we're running out of time. We've got to wrap up. But before we go, I just want to talk about what's coming next. You know, it's always the big question. What's in the pipeline? What are we looking at? We've talked about hybrid, you know, being the sort of, I guess, the cutting edge of development at the moment. And I don't know if you've got any thoughts about where and how people are developing their hybrid strategies, or where you start when you think about that.
Yeah, I think the key is just planning ahead. And, you know, we mentioned earlier this almost danger of thinking, right, I'm going to make a decision and it's going to be a face-to-face event. But with all the uncertainty that's happening, you can't necessarily guarantee that that's going to happen. So it's actually thinking, right, actually, we're going to be, you know, virtual first, but then we're going to commit to that. Or we're going to be hybrid, and then think about all the different factors, what could change, and have a plan for it. Because going back to user experience, going back to the community, everything we've already spoken about, you have to consider every single thing at every step of the journey.
Yeah, and I think a key lesson that I've picked up anyway from this is not necessarily expecting the experience to be the same whether you're virtual or whether you're face-to-face, and tailoring that experience to the individual, you know, to those different circumstances, because they will be very different.
Completely, yeah. I do think that's a really good point. And I think it's just constantly thinking about who's attending, how are they going to feel, what are you going to give them, how are they, and keeping them engaged as well, making them come back to events. Don't just give them one event every year. Think about, right, what other things can we do 365 days a year to bring them back and keep them engaged?
There's one thing as well I've heard, which is kind of companies running maybe one big event where they're expecting a lot of people to come, and that's the kind of big, you know, main event. But then giving people the option of going to sort of localized hubs and pods. And there was a lady I had interviewed talking about the fact that they saw in the chat of their event that people were going, oh, hey, can we get one of these going in such and such a town, you know? So they actually reached out to those guys and said, look, we will sponsor you to meet up. Mm. We will pay for your, you know, meet up space and drinks and stuff like that as a spin-off. I thought that's the kind of thing, you know, build community,
that's
build
the
passion. Yeah,
definitely. Can I chuck in another one for the future?
Yeah.
Obviously, a buzzword that's going around at the moment is metaverse. Mm-hmm. You know, what does that look like for B2B companies especially? And we're seeing the likes of Gymshark, and they recently filmed one of their virtual meetings in the metaverse. And it's, you know, we work with a lot of global B2B tech brands. And if we're thinking about audience, their audience are talking about the metaverse.
Spot on for them, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, these early adopters, they're the ones that are looking into cryptocurrency. You know, they're so, I'm not gonna pretend I know much about NFTs and things, but I think if we're thinking of, you know, we used to go to events and you'd get given a pair of socks from one of the stands, you don't get that virtually. So actually, is this, you know, NFT, could you have something created that's branded that you give them virtually, whether it's an attendance badge for an event, and then because of this community feel, you want to collect more and more of them.
Virtual swag.
So yeah, virtual swag. There
you
go.
Yeah, that's an opportunity. I certainly think the, you know, whether we call it the metaverse or whether we just call it, you know, a VR event, you know, those are starting to happen. We're starting to see conferences where you can, you know, walk around and experience the booths and things like that. And I think certainly for tech companies, they should be looking into that space. But the simple fact of getting people in a room, providing them with some simple VR headset so that they can actually, you know, be talking to each other as if they were together, I could really see that working for some of the sort of breakout sessions, the networking, facilitating that. And I suppose the only problem is that most of us don't have the headsets, most of us don't know what the hell we're doing with that stuff yet.
Well, this is it. And again, going back to user experience, if you don't have the right home setup and you're, you know, you want to tune into this amazing VR conference, for example, if you don't have the headset, 3D audio maybe, you know, all these different things are going to give you that amazing experience, it's not going to be very good. So it's actually what's right for you, what's right for your brand, and accessibility. So I know the Oculus Quest 2 from Facebook, that was massively popular at Christmas. I think it was like one of the most bought gadgets for a presence. And actually the Apple App Store, it was the number one downloaded app. So that's, I mean, that just shows consumer behavior is moving towards VR, but it's still not accessible for everyone.
So if your audience is probably on the younger end of the market, a bit more tech savvy, this could be a reality in this next year or so.
Yeah, I think so. And I think it wouldn't be out of line to say that probably next year we will see VR events really taking off. I think if you're a tech brand now, dip your toe in the water, like definitely be looking into it because your audience already are.
Great. All right. Well, look, there's a definitely a futuristic note to leave us on. Next time, we're going to be talking about community.
Which we've spoken a lot about today.
Exactly.
Very important.
It rolls on, how you build community around your brand. So both kind of on social platforms, but maybe off platforms and in other spaces. So tune back in for that. But for now, thank you for listening or watching to B2B Bites Back.
Thanks, guys. Bye.